Welcome into a brand new episode of Callin' It. I'm Alex Barth, joined as always by Alex Leibowitz. We're recording just before the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour here in Boston on Tuesday, December 15th. And for all you new listeners, the reason I give the time at the top of every episode is we have this thing called the Callin' It Curse, which is basically, especially when we first started the show, but it still happens from time to time, news breaks right after we're done recording. And instead of recording a brand new episode, because we have to get on with our lives, we chalk it up to the Callin' It Curse and we move on. But we obviously don't want people thinking that we just ignored major events. So I throw the time in there so people know kind of the information that we're working with. That being said, I think we do, in fact, have one new listener this week, because as we find out, Alex Leibowitz's very good friend, Jose Canseco, is a fan of the show. So hello to Jose Canseco.
Yes.
And hello to Leibowitz.
Thank you. Hello. How are you both? This is great news. This is probably the proudest I've ever been over a follow. I'm not like you have a lot of followers. I don't have very many. It's a very select group.
More and, people, by the way, at what you're A Leibowitz on Twitter,
at,
right?
It's at Alex, A-L-E-X, underscore Leibowitz.
There's follow him. He's got the takes.
I got the hot takes. I fire out the political stuff. It's great. You either love me or you hate me. Or, you know, you'll probably just hate me. But yeah, Jose Canseco followed me yesterday out of the blue. There's no reason for it. We have no mutual follows. We have there's people that I follow that he also follows, like Joe Rogan and Buster Rollins, people like that.
But did you have a tweet blow up or anything?
I mean, I had an event last week, which was big, but I don't think that got to Jose Canseco. I'm saying,
did you like go viral or anything in the last couple of days?
I don't think so. I mean, is there anything?
Yeah, you would know if you did.
I mean, honestly, one of the tweets that got the most interaction for me, it was that one, me saying I'm proud to welcome Jose Canseco to my following club. And there's really nothing like over like 15 likes that I have over the past few days. No double doubles. I maybe have only had one double double in my life. So I'm not on the basketball court. Basketball court, I also don't have double doubles. I get 10 rebounds, but I can't score for crap. So anyway, I'm a big fella. Yeah, exactly. I'll get you like, who is that guy who would get like 12 rebounds a game? But also like 0 points. I think he played for the Pacers.
He played for a bunch of teams. I used to always sign him in 2K. Reggie Evans.
Reggie Evans.
That's what I'm thinking of, I think. Yeah.
I am the Reggie Evans of Y-ball back in the day. But anyway, and I'd say I'm probably the same way on Twitter too. I'm not scoring a lot of points on Twitter, but I got Jose Canseco following me, and you know what? That's enough. I'm a simple man. I don't need much to be happy. Just, you know, my friends, my family, and Jose Canseco following me on Twitter. That's all I need.
I pulled off the rare triple-triple the other day on Twitter. So a double-double on Twitter is double digits of either replies, retweets, or likes.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a rare triple-triple the other day. I had triple digits, replies, retweets, and likes. So that was pretty cool. But enough vanity.
You've had a lot though. You tweet out some stuff that goes viral, not just like local viral.
Yeah, and, I mean it helps because I have like access to the Pat stuff. I don't know. We'll see. I was trying to get to 5,000 followers by the end of football season. I was kind of banking on having at least one playoff game to do that. I just passed 4,900, so we'll see. I need a new
right
one
there.
Here in
you're
the
right
next
there.
Couple of days. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Follow me too, I guess. At Real Alex Barth. And please follow me, Jose Canseco. I think you'll like my content as well. I grew up a big Mark McGwire fan, first sports jersey I ever owned. So maybe we can talk Bash Brothers sometimes. And we'll get into baseball a little later in the episode, but I want to start in the NFL. It looked like it was going to be a stinker of a weekend. This was the first time in a while I've gotten to watch Red Zone, and I was all excited for the witching hour. I had my whole day planned out. I planned my meals out around the witching hour, and then every 1 o'clock game just sucked pretty much. But I thought the 4 o'clock window was good. A lot of close games. I actually liked the Sunday night game better than some people did. It certainly wasn't one for the ages, but there were elements of that game I enjoyed. And then obviously Monday night, that game was anything but a stinker, Leibowitz.
It was. Yeah, you can emphasize the stinker part. No, it was a good game. It was a good. It was. There was one stinker. There was one stinker. Two, if you count the Browns. but Lamar Jackson. Obviously, I think the story of that game, beyond it, you know, being a good game. I mean, they were up by at least two scores. Browns came back, and then it was a shootout till the end, really. And it was really highlighted from Lamar Jackson running towards the locker room with what was described as a cramp.
And by the way, yes, it was described as a cramp. Did you see the video of him running back there?
It was like the turtles out of the shell type of run.
I've seen that run. I have made that run. That's not a cramp. Okay.
If you have a cramp, you're not running. You're limping and you need help. That's not me. So I think he's right. I think he had a stomach cramp in which he had to poop really bad. I think that's what he was really saying. That's probably what the trainers meant. So we all read between the lines.
Just needed an IV, why wouldn't they put him in the blue tent?
They should just put him in.
And I don't think they should start putting a little porta potty there in the blue tent. Maybe
not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea because, you know, guys have to go to the bathroom. I guarantee you there's players who go into the blue tent to pee into like water bottles constantly. Or they just go in their pants like Jeff Saturday.
I'll tell you this. When we have access to Pats practice, right, during the year, and they let us out like in the middle, like towards the beginning, but we don't – the players are already on the field when we go out there, right? Almost to a T, Joe Tooney's running out of the Port-a-John. Every time when we get out there, it's like he does his pregame stretch, he does his pre-practice stretching, and then I don't know how long he's in there because he's leaving as we get there, but you know, I think that's part of his routine more or less. So,
and I got to tell you, that's part of my routine, not just for athletics, but for everything. I always make sure to try to squeeze one out before I go anywhere, because you never want to be in a situation where you can't hold. Like, that's just because I've been there too. And look,
public bathrooms are the worst.
They're the worst. You want to avoid them at all costs. Although I'm not above using them. I'll tell you that right now. But also, like, you don't do that. You don't do what Joe Tooney does. Use the bathroom before practice, unless you've had an experience that causes you to use the bathroom before practice. Like, there's
just
a story
one time
behind
he did it. Maybe just one time he did it, and then he had a really good game, and it's just a tradition now. I guess that would be an experience, but
I think the more probable scenario is one time he didn't do it, and he had a really bad experience, really bad game, and it's probably smelly too.
Well, remember James Harden?
What happened? He pooped himself
against the Celtics.
He pooped himself against the Celtics.
In white shorts. Do you not remember that? It was like 2 years
ago.
Oh,
I do remember that.
No, it was last year. It was right before the shutdown. It was that overtime game they played in February. God, that feels like 5 years ago. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do remember. It was really like a skid mark. It was skid marks, but it was on his shorts, which makes it seem like, you know, that he full on pooped. Allegedly.
Look, James Harden has kind of become one of the, and we'll get into him in a little bit, one of the butts of the jokes of the NBA. No pun intended.
Yeah, so might as well make a poop joke about him.
Some actual football, though, before we kind of move on from the NFL, because the one thing this weekend told me, normally, you know, there's parity, but you have like three or four teams that are true Super Bowl contenders, right? You know, like last year, you had the Chiefs, you had the Ravens, you had the Niners, and that was kind of like the group. You knew it was going to come from that group, the Super Bowl team. And, you know, ultimately the Ravens got upset early, but for most of the regular season, there was a true hierarchy. That group this year, that upper echelon group of NFL teams, might be eight teams deep. It really might. You have the Chiefs, the Steelers, and the AFC. You have the Chiefs, the Steelers, the Bills, the Titans, and you kind of have to put the Ravens in because they have the defending MVP. And then I think that the Saints, the Packers, and the Seahawks are all legitimate contenders in the NFC. I don't know that any one of those teams is so far above the other. So, I mean, the NFL really, and what's been a rough year, and it's been a rough year for the NFL. There's no way around that. But they came out this weekend and flexed what makes them the greatest sporting product in the world.
Yeah, and I feel like we say this every week. Again, just going back to that game, beyond all of those theatrics that we described, going back and forth, it was a 3.5-point spread. And there was that safety at the end of the game, which – you know, is unreal. You talk about blowing up on Twitter, I mean, and blowing up toilets. That game was huge. That game was massive. But I'm sorry, that's the last one, I swear.
I doubt it.
The NFL is king. It's amazing. It really is. And even when you have that 1 o'clock slate that was a complete and utter dud, you make up for it. You're going to have a few games in there that are you know, incredible watches, especially once you get to this stage in the season. And especially when you have something like fantasy football, which I know my team's in the playoffs right now, that's, you know, something that has fan engagement more than you know, the games themselves, you can almost argue. So it really is incredible. And the fact that we are here right now, we're entering, what, week 15? And it's as tight as it is in the AFC. And there's parity, and it's fun to watch. And most games are pretty much unpredictable. That's awesome. That's great for the league. And I think this is, you know, it's pretty remarkable that despite what's gone on this year, football season has been good. I've enjoyed it. And I don't think we've really sat back and acknowledged that the NFL, despite a lot of bumps in the road, despite a lot of missteps, and I would argue due to no credit that they deserve, they pulled it off. And it's been a fun season to watch.
Yeah, I would say despite their best efforts, they pulled it off. One team, interestingly enough, not in that tier. I mean, they're not really in any tier. Looking at a potential top 10 pick is the New England Patriots. Of course, things are different. But, okay, so here's what I was worried about with Brady and Bill when the separation happened, or even if it didn't. Right? People have been saying for years, at least a decade, that they're overrated and the end is near or whatever. In that, you know, the end was eventually going to come. They weren't going to make the AFC Championship game every single year for 40 or 50 years, right? The end was going to happen. And people jumping on that end is kind of an I told you so. When, you know, if you're wrong for 10 years and then you're finally right, you're not really that right. You just kind of stuck to your guns, which there's nothing wrong with, but you're not exactly right. So now people are looking at this. And the Patriots are going to miss the playoffs, and they've had a historically bad offense. And people are saying, this is it. This is Bill without Brady. Bill can't coach. The record was posted today. Bill Belichick, 61-70 without Brady, compared to Rex Ryan's career 61-66 mark. But here's the problem with that. You're taking a fraction, less than 50% of Bill Belichick's career, as opposed to all of Rex Ryan's career. And you're saying when he didn't have a good quarterback, he's not good. That's true about anybody. What's, you know, Sean Payton, I think, is a great coach. What's Sean Payton's record without Drew Brees? Okay. We go into this all the time with Bruce Arians and the players that he's coached, and he sucks. So to say Bill can't coach without Brady, to say the quarterback coach, the coach can't coach without a quarterback, yeah. And if my aunt had nuts, she'd be my uncle. Okay. You can't really make this determination. You can't, and I saw people defend it. He has an MVP quarterback 5 years ago. 5 years ago. Give him Kurt Warner today and see what the record is. That argument's invalid. Now, if they go out and they get Matthew Stafford next year, they get Matt Ryan, they get Alex Smith, and they're still a non-playoff team, a sub-500 team, we can look into this conversation a little bit more, certainly. But to use this year as evidence that Bill Belichick was never all that good is asinine.
Yeah. Now, and for the record, I might rather have Cam Newton than Alex Smith. But if they get a Matt,
Alex Smith has looked very good the last couple of weeks.
He's looked pretty
good.
And
Alex Smith doesn't turn the ball over, ever. He has one of the lowest turnover rates in the NFL the last 5 years. He has a top five turnover rate. Cam Newton has a bottom 10 turnover rate.
He is a safe.
In the Patriots system, give me the guy that doesn't turn the ball over.
That's fair. That's fair. I'd rather Matt Stafford out of those three would be my choice. But I get the point. Yeah, I mean, it really just is so dumb. And I mean, the people who are saying this, who are making this point that Belichick isn't a good coach, I mean, they clearly just it's either they don't watch the games, they don't watch football, they haven't paid attention over the last 20 years, or they just want to be the hot take machines, which I just find it to be shameless and dumb and weak. So it annoys me. It does. It annoys me because Cam Newton has not played well this season. They've dealt with injuries. It's an odd year that you could argue affected the Patriots more so than others, given, you know, the loss of guys like Dante Hightower and Patrick Chung. And the injuries they sustained did not help. This isn't a very good roster. And I think one could argue that the Patriots being 6-7 right now is impressive in and of itself, given the roster that they have. But despite that, you're looking at 1 year or 2 years, if you want to go back to last season, and you're painting, you know, Bill Belichick's legacy with that brush and ignoring 20 years of his career to make your point. Here's a newsflash. If you have to, you know, forget about 20 years of a person's career, if you have to discount 20 years of somebody's career to make your point about how good they are, your point stinks, simply put. It's just not a good point, and it's not a good take. And just because people are going to get riled up about that take doesn't give it merit at all. It just makes you shameless. So Belichick, give me him over any other coach in the NFL. I think anybody with a brain would say that. And I think that this year, although disappointing, it's not an indication of Belichick's, you know, legacy of where he stands among the greats. He still is the great. He is the greatest. So it just annoys me that people, you know, try to make these hot takes in such a dishonest fashion. So, but I mean, that's sports media. That's Boston sports media to a T.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think to say that's Boston sports media. I mean, I think it exists elsewhere, right? A lot of the Belichick echo chamber started nationally, certainly. And yeah, there's some in Boston sports media who I think want to be done with it. And the other thing is the people who say, you know, I've seen this take that Bill should give up the GM role so he can focus on coaching. First of all, there's a massive advantage to having your GM and head coach be the same person. The only reason every team doesn't do it is not every team can do it. Not everybody can do it. Those guys are rare. But a lot of good teams have been sunk by the idea or been sunk by the fact that the general manager and the head coach kind of had two different visions, and players were brought in by the general manager to be used one way and the coach used them another way. A lot of talented teams have suffered because of that. So to have just one brain making both decisions is a big deal. Second of all, Bill Belichick's draft record, his player acquisition record, is not as bad as people will tell you. He certainly made some questionable decisions, right? They showed that graphic during the Patriots-Rams game about the wide receivers drafted since 2010. The context kind of missing from that graphic is that I think all but two of those guys were day three picks, right? They're pretty much all fifth, sixth, seventh round picks. You're not expecting to hit on those guys. Those are flyers. So where people say Belichick can't draft wide receivers, the issue is more he never really put any emphasis into drafting them. He never put any focus on the wide receiver position in the draft, which is an issue, which is a legitimate issue. But and yeah, N'Keal Harry, I don't think has lived up to expectations, certainly. And there are issues with how he has drafted wide receivers. But to say he's swung and missed constantly, I think is a mischaracterization. The bigger issue is that he just never emphasized it. You look at the tight end position. After drafting Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez in 2010, between that draft and last year where he took two tight ends, there's only one tight end taken in the 10 years in between. That was Lee Smith. He was a sixth-round pick the year after Gronk and Hernandez in 2011. He didn't make the team. He's still playing. He's actually on the Buffalo Bills. He's a solid blocking tight end. But you know, to say Bill can't draft tight ends, it's not that he can't, he just doesn't. That's a different issue. It's an issue. It's a fair issue, but it's a different issue. So all I'm going to say is if you're going to criticize the guy, understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. And you could, I mean, if you want to point at how he's drafted wide receivers and how, and let's add undrafted free agents into this discussion. How has he done on the offensive line? Pretty damn good.
Yep. How's he done at cornerback, which is arguably the hardest position outside of quarterback to evaluate?
And the irony behind that is, you know, you have the Cyrus Jones and the Rozai Dowlings who don't do anything, but you also have the J.C. Jacksons and the Malcolm Butlers as well. And you'd argue that, you know, that benefit outweighs the detriment of wasting those picks. And, you know, Jordan Richards, there's plenty of picks. Kyle Duggar looks pretty damn good this season. Looks like that.
He looks like a player.
He looks like a player.
I don't know what his ceiling is, but he's an NFL player. I think we've figured that much out.
He's all over the place. So I mean, people can nitpick wherever they want. I think Belichick is still a pretty good drafter. I think that he's obviously missed. I'm sure there's other minds in the NFL who've probably had a higher success rate. But when you look at the whole package, Belichick's the guy. He's the person you want. And I think your point, you know, you hit the nail on the head. To have your GM and head coach be the same person or at the very least have the same vision, which is obviously going to be the same the case if they're the same person, that's huge, and that leads to a ton of success.
It's the only way you can guarantee that it's going to be the same vision. Because even if two people think they're on the same page, it's not necessarily going to be the case. The only way you guarantee that the players are being used in the ways they were brought in for is if it's the same person. Now, maybe they're not being used in the right way, which I also think has been Bill's problem at times.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, N'Keal Harry would be the prime example of that. But, yeah, I don't think it's worth risking that disconnect. And also, I mean, Belichick's not going to answer to a GM. There's no way.
Not at this point.
No. Who are you really going to bring in who's going to be able to tell Bill Belichick how to run his football team? Like, if you want to bring people in to fix the problem, get a new wide receivers coach. Bring in a scout who specializes in wide receivers, somebody like that. You're not, you know, getting Bill more help, certainly, I think, is valid. Putting somebody above Bill isn't going to fix anything. It's probably just going to make things worse.
Yeah, the next time you make a move as a Patriots when it comes to your head coach or GM, it seems like a foregone conclusion. It's going to be when Bill Belichick retires, because the second you try to bring in another GM, you know, to replace that part of his job, the guy's going to have an ego, and he deserves to with his record. So, I mean, it's just a pipe dream, and it's a talking point that I couldn't disagree with more.
All right, let's move on to some baseball talk here. We can get into the nitty-gritty and, oh, the Red Sox signed Hunter Renfro. Woo-wee! Yeah, I don't care. Platoon outfielder. Doesn't play center field. Jackie Bradley Jr. ? Still out there. All the big-name free agents are still out there. Trevor Bauer, Marcelo Zuna, George Springer. Sagano still hasn't been posted in Japan. So this is what I want to talk about here. The off-seasons in the other three sports are so good. And part of the reason they're so good is they're kind of condensed down to 2 weeks. And I know you want things to talk about throughout the calendar, yada, yada, yada. Baseball's got to fix this, Lebowitz. We're sitting here late December. The winter meetings already happened. They happened virtually, but they've already happened. And there's nothing. There's nothing. And we're going to have to wait until March, when baseball's already in the news anyway because of spring training, to kind of get some closure on these free agents and figure out what's going to happen. And that kind of sucks. That really sucks. Team building has become, I think, in the world of sports, when everybody's playing fantasy and you're doing franchise modes on Madden or 2K, whatever, team building, I think, is as interesting as the games themselves. Not every league is the NBA, where the offseason is better than the regular season. But team building has become a major thing, and baseball just won't give it to us, and that's boring to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is a perpetual problem with the MLB. It seems like, you know, easy steps to get more fan engagement should be made, but for some reason they haven't been. And you could look at, you know, how the MLB operates from a social media standpoint. And right now you can look at how they're operating from an offseason standpoint and how, you know, the needle hasn't really moved. There hasn't been any huge move, nothing that really has ignited any fan base. I think the biggest thing we've seen is, you know, probably the Mets changing ownership, going to Steve Cohen and being in the mix and becoming, you know, a legitimate, you know, team that wants to win. But other than that, when it comes to free agent standpoint, there's nothing. I saw a tweet yesterday. It was an MLB tweet of Mike Trout, and he hits a complete bomb. It's just mesmerizing. Like, catcher's point of view, you see the ball leave his bat and it's going at least 400, 450 feet. And my reaction is, boy, it really sucks that this guy is a bore and he plays on a team that no one gives a crap about. And, you know, I think you could say that for a lot of players in the MLB. You could say that for a lot of teams in the MLB. It's just the type of thing where you look at what's going on this offseason and it seems like there's this just downward trajectory that's been going on in this league for the past 5-10 years. And it's sad to watch, and I don't think the pandemic has helped at all, even though I think they could have used it in some way to their advantage. And but they didn't, and now we're here, you know, December 15th, waiting for something to happen, and still it's just, you know, dud after dud, it seems like.
So, and then for the free agency result could be pretty boring, because it sounds like the Mets and Steve Cohen's got all this money and he's fun on Twitter or whatever. I'm not – confession. I'm not as into Steve Cohen as everybody else is. I think he's good for the Mets. I think he's good for baseball. I don't know. Everybody's so giddy about it. It just doesn't do it for me.
You don't love the idea of a fan? Like, because he's like, say what you want about Steve Cohen. He's a legitimate Mets fan. And I love the idea of
it's really cool that a fan owns the team. That's really cool. But the whole thing where, like, he's asking fans on Twitter, like, who do you want us to sign? Da, 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 like, and everybody's like, that's so cool. Like, I'm sorry. He's not actually. Yeah. Mike P. 45927 on Twitter says, go sign this guy. And Steve Cohen's going to be like, you're right. Or like, you know, Jessica Mrs. Met on Twitter says, we should have, you know, this kind of food in the ballpark. And he's going to be like, let's do that. Like, come on. The guy's running a multi-million dollar business. He's not. It's cute that he does that. It's cute. Right. It's cute that he does that on Twitter. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a grump.
I think right now, it's obvious that right now Mets fans and Steve Cohen are in the honeymoon phase. And
oh, absolutely.
This isn't going to last.
That's more my thing. Yeah. Can he be so cutesy with them in back and forth when the team wins 80 games? That's it for me.
But if he has unlimited money and he's willing to go over the luxury tax constantly, they won't be that team. And I think that's what Mets fans want.
That kind of leads into my question. If all the top free agents, right, and Bauer's the favorite for the Mets and Springer's the favorite for the Mets right now, and I think they're expected to be in on Sugano. If the Mets get all the top free agents, is that really a fun free agency?
For Mets fans, it is.
I guess. Yeah, I guess. You're not wrong.
Well, I mean,
I don't know. Like, spread the talent out. We just talked about with the NFL, the parity is what makes it so good. Baseball's kind of been lacking parity the last couple of years. So I'd like to see the talent spread out.
Too, because you talk about parity. Look at the team that was just in the World Series, the Tampa Bay Rays, right? No one cares about the Tampa Bay. So, like, you want –
I would rather the Mets be good than the Rays. Yes, I'll give you that.
And I'd rather also the Mets and the Yankees be good at the same time than the Rays and whoever else be good at. Like, I think it's good for the league to have big market teams, have big market rosters, and a good bit. And the Mets have been horrendous. My Steve Cohen, that's a good thing. Like, having someone like that, given what we see in the MLB constantly, having an owner like that who puts himself out there, who's kind of like a Mark Cuban to an extent, who catches eyeballs, who you know, is about fan engagement, they need more of that, not less of it. Yeah, like, give me less of creepy John Henry and the Steinbrenner family, whoever it is. I like having this guy, Steve Cohen, who grew up a Mets fan, be the owner. And you know, that's obviously not even scratching the surface of the issues going on in the MLB, but it helps. It helps. And I don't care if the Rays are good. I really don't. I think that team should have moved out of Tampa Bay 10 years ago, personally. I don't care, you know, if the Athletics are good. They don't have a great fit. I want marketable players to be marketed the right way. I want them to be on teams that are also marketable. And I just want the MLB to do a better job of emulating leagues like the NBA and the NFL. And they've never done that efficiently. So Steve Cohen, bring it on. Keep being that guy. I hope it lasts. I really do, because they need more of that in that league.
All right. One last quick baseball thought here before we move on. You talk about big market teams, big time players, former, I think he was a batting champion in the National League. DJ LeMahieu. Was he batting champion?
I don't. I'll look that up real quick. While you
look that up real quick while I make this point. It's a quick point. DJ LeMahieu, good year last year for the Yankees. Good player, I think. One of the better free agents this year. Him and the Yankees are $25 million apart. And yes, MLB now has this new luxury tax, and they've basically set a salary cap without setting a salary cap, and I get teams need to be careful with their money. But, Lebowitz, did you ever think you would see the day where the Yankees and a good player were $25 million apart?
No. And this is, again, going back to the point I was just making. It's like, It's not that the Yankees don't care about money, and the, you know, luxury tax is good for getting teams
apparently
like.
Apparently they do.
Now they do. If George were around, they wouldn't.
And yes, he was a reigning batting champion, DJ LeMay. He's done it twice.
Two times. So there you go. 348 back in 2016. Wow. Anyway, it's bizarre, but also like I mean I kind of get it. If they're not in on this guy, I don't think they need him necessarily. He's a great player, but you
have
to make
those. Aaron Boone, 18 minutes ago. It's no secret that LeMahieu, it's no secret that he is our number one priority to bring back. $25 million apart.
Let me ask you this, though, because I think probably the reason they're so far apart is how the pandemic's affected the marketplace in the MLB. And all, I mean, probably not all of sports. I'm sure it's the MLB Yankees. More than others. They're the Yankees. I know.
Doesn't matter. As a Red Sox fan who has taken crap for 2 years about the Red Sox being too cheap to pay Mookie Betts, DJ LeMahieu's not Mookie Betts, but I'm going to get my swings in the other way now. You're the New York Yankees, defending batting title. $25 million. Should never happen to that team. Never.
Yeah. It's a bad sign. But hey, the pendulum's shifting. It looks like the Mets city now, right? Steve Cohen.
He's the king of Queens. Just as a middle finger for no other reason.
I mean, that would be awesome.
Somebody tweet that because he's listening. Tweet that at Steve Cohen,
please. I mean, this goes back like the Red Sox and Yankees. They've liked each other for the past like 10 years. I feel like. I mean, they had 2018, great season, decent little rivalry, but we don't want them liking each other. We want them hating each other. It's more fun that way. Bring the drama. I want this bidding war in New York City. That'd be awesome. Let's get that rivalry going. I want to bring it back to the early 2000s when it was Piazza going up against Roger Clemens. That'd be amazing. And that's coming from a Red Sox fan. So bring it on, Steve. Keep it going.
Yeah, I'm sick of the Mets being the little engine that couldn't. I think that time is about up. All right, that's it for you. Got any other baseball thoughts, or are you good?
I think that does it.
All right, let's move on then. We have to talk about, and we're about a month late on this, but it's still new to a lot of people. We have to talk about the PS5, the Xbox Series X, and if anybody has one, because there's now, and when they first came out, it was tough to get one, and everybody kind of figured, it's a new item, it's a hot item, the latest console, and they made them super affordable, whereas prices were going up and up and up on these new consoles. They actually went down. I think you get the slimmed down version of the Xbox Series X for like $300, which is incredible. I think the Xbox One, when it came out, was pushing $700. So everybody figured, they're going to be in short supply. You know, they'll beef up, they'll get them out for the holidays. Everybody will get theirs for the holidays. Now, here we are on December 15th, and people still can't get them. And it turns out that these nerds, and we hate the nerds on this show, we're not fans of the nerds. We are. So I've been called a nerd, a sports nerd. I'm more of a dork. Nerds are good at math. I'm not good at math. That's the line there. I am a dork. I don't like the nerds. I don't like the analytics, any of it. I don't like the math. But these people have programmed their computers that as soon as Walmart or GameStop or whoever has consoles in stock, the computer program can beat human beings in, because you got to go past that wall and prove you're not a robot and the whole John Mulaney bit. You've got to go in and prove you're not it can go in and prove it's not a robot quicker than the people, even though it is a robot, and buy up all the consoles. And then these people are selling them, marked the hell up, and it's a damn shame. It's the same people probably who were doing it with the hand sanitizer at the beginning of the pandemic. These a-holes.
Yeah, and so, unfortunately for those a-holes, they got screwed eventually.
Right. But these people aren't, and it sucks because, I'm not – I haven't really tried to get a new Xbox. Part of the reason is I just know I can't, and that's a bummer. And look, these consoles always have bugs at the beginning, and I don't think there's anything wrong with waiting a year or two. Like, I probably would wait 2 years if not for the fact that the show is coming out on Xbox this year, and I've wanted to play the show for years, and I've never had a PlayStation, and now I'll have a chance to do it. And I'm guessing they're not going to release it on Xbox One. They're only going to release it on the new one. So that'll be, if I can get one, that will probably be when I look to get one. Also, the pandemic, who has money? But just to these a-holes who have built these programs, buying all the consoles, taking them away from kids, You feel good about yourself?
I mean,
you feel big?
They're scammers.
Get over it. Scammers, you said?
Scammers and schemers.
Well,
they're both.
No, because scheme implies being clever. I don't know. I look at a scheme.
It is clever.
I think of like a heist. Like, you son of a bitch, I'm in, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, these guys are just a-holes. They're literally taking candy from babies is what they're doing. Out of here with that.
Have you seen, and there's an even worse thing happening, which is people are buying the PS5, and then they're selling the box only for like $700 on eBay because people aren't reading the description carefully.
Right. And I didn't see that with the box. I saw people selling controllers for the price of a whole console. I did not see the box. Wow.
Like an empty box. Sending an empty. Imagine you want a PS5. You drop 700 bills. You get it from UPS or wherever. You open it up. Nothing. Nothing. I mean, talk about a pit in your stomach. That would be horrendous. And those people deserve to be executed, if you ask me. But both the people who buy them and the people who sell them, like, you got to know better than to buy that stuff. I find that the older I get, the less I enjoy video games, or just the less invested I am in them. I find that, you know, it's the same way with sleep. Like I don't sleep in quite as late as I used to.
I slept in until 11 o'clock both days this weekend. First time in a long time.
And it's not
probably first time since I started working again, since I got off my furlough in July. Oh, it felt so good.
Let me tell you, once in a while, you know, on a weekend, I'll sleep till 9:30, 10 o'clock.
So what do you do? What do you do the nights you stay up till like 1, 2 in the morning?
I mean, if you stay up till 1 in the morning and you sleep till 8:39, you're still getting 7.5, 8 hours of sleep.
What about, let's say you're watching TV, you think you're going to go to bed, and Con Air comes on AMC at 1:30. You're not going to bed until 3:30, 4 o'clock.
I'm not up.
You're laughing. I had that night, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a year. It's not always Con Air. It might be Armageddon. But like,
oh God,
you don't sleep 11 the next day?
Not for those movies, no. I usually go to bed at a reasonable time. The latest I'll go to bed is usually like 12.
If I know I don't have to get up the next day, I'll stay up till 2, 3 in the morning. Play Xbox, watch movies, whatever.
And that's fun, but then I feel like I wait, like, because I still, even if I had nothing to do, and listen, this has been my world since, you know, goddamn April 1st. I got furloughed from my job. I got furloughed from my job March 31st. So April 1st to now, I've been unemployed. And, you know, I've been planning other stuff. It's not like I'm not doing anything. I find that even when you have nothing to do, especially if you're someone who never has anything to do, you need some structure so you don't go crazy. So I still try to wake up at the same time every day. I still try to go to bed at around the same time every day. I try to work out every day. I try to, you know, read or do whatever every day. Apply to jobs, contact me, do all that stuff. You need it. You need it. What I don't do, so I think maybe because there's been more structure in my life, to bring this back to what we were talking about, I'm not as into video games. I play them at night. You know, once I get beyond like 5 o'clock at night, okay, that's when I can start unwinding and maybe play some video games and whatnot. But I'm not staying up till, you know, if I stay up till 12:30, 1 o'clock, it usually isn't because I'm watching something. It's usually because I'm on the phone with somebody or I'm FaceTiming a few friends or it's something like that. Point being, back to the main topic of discussion.
Yep.
I'm not buying the PS5 anytime soon. I think if you buy it,
it's not up to you.
I can't. Yeah, I also can't.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you don't want to buy one, I get that. Wouldn't you at least like the choice?
I mean, I yes and no. Like, I kind of understand that this is what comes with it, and this seems like a very logical progression. You know, with internet activity, like it's like you're going to have these schemes. You're going to have people doing this sort of thing. I'm more surprised that, you know, these websites aren't more secure. Or, you know, they don't have any way of combating this stuff. That's on them. If there's somebody, I'm a believer that if you could find a way to do something within the bounds of the law, which this seems like they're doing, maybe they're a little scummy, but yeah, do it. I mean, it's not your fault that you're taking advantage of something that is, you know, complete oversight on the company side. So, Yeah, I'm going to stick with my PS4. I think it's good. I told you before we started recording. Right now, the game I'm playing, it's on Xbox 360, not Xbox One, Xbox 360, Madden 07, the one where you can do the combines, the one where you can pick the parents of your superstar, and it's a lot of fun, and I like it. And guess what? The gameplay is still pretty damn good.
So I don't disagree with you there. I actually, when I was furloughed, I went back and I pulled out my original Xbox.
I did that, too.
I was playing Madden 04, Roller Coaster Tycoon, Operation Desert Storm. That was a great game, like pre-Call of Duty. I couldn't find Halo. I don't know what happened to my copy of Halo. Halo 2 was a great game.
And
let's not forget, the best sports video game ever created, you need the 360. NCAA Football 14.
I've gone through that one since the pandemic started, 100%. I also went through, I'm not ashamed to say, well, two games, MVP 05, everyone knows that one.
Yeah, and I played some of that on the Xbox, Xbox.
NCAA 05.
Oh, the baseball one?
Well, I have that one, not that one, though, the football one.
Okay. I got the baseball. The baseball one's actually a ton of fun.
Oh, it's the same thing as MVP. It's just college teams.
Right.
What they should have done, this is the real shame in MVP discontinuing, because they could have continued with that at least until, 2014. And they could have done what NCAA does. And you could start a career in NCAA and transfer it to Madden. All those possibilities are out the door now. Hopefully one day we'll get these games back, MVP and NCAA baseball.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Well, look, like MVP baseball was good. I think DeShow's a really good game. The only problem is it doesn't exist for Xbox.
Yeah, yeah. I got the PS4 pretty much for the lone reason to play DeShow. And it's worth it. I've had it for a few years now, and it's I love that game. And you can get every game on Xbox. You can get every game on PS4 that you can get on Xbox. So it works out. It's not the other way around. And but I guess I don't see the need for paying $500 for these new consoles when the consoles of the past are all like really, really good still. Like, we're so spoiled. And this idea that we need to continue to update. I know that's like a tenet in you know, human evolution.
Part of it is you're mostly playing sports games, right?
Well, I play like Spider-Man. The Spider-Man game's awesome. That's a great one. I played Red Dead. Good game. Those games are still good. It might not be quite as good with the graphics, and maybe there's one or two, you know, accessories that you'll get on PS5 that you won't get on PS4. I get that. But is it worth the $500 extra? I don't think so. Fair point.
Look, like I said, I probably would wait a year or two, but I've been waiting so long to play the show that I want to play it already. I'll pay. And part of it is because they're so affordable, and that's why they're so hard to get. Like, if it was $800 for the console, I probably wouldn't. But, you know, I was kind of preparing for $800, and I got $500, so I guess I'm like, you know what, whatever, maybe I'll go for it. Who knows? All right. We wanted to get a bit into sports betting in Massachusetts, but I think you have the timer. Where are we at?
We're about 44 minutes in.
Well, you want to save that one for next week?
Yeah, we'll save it for next week.
That would be
this will be a perpetual thing.
Right. It would be the ultimate call on it curse if Massachusetts legalizes sports gaming in the next week. And if they do, we're taking all the credit.
We are. We have to.
Putting the topic off.
We're reverse jinxing it. And, you know, it's not like the state of Massachusetts could use that revenue right now. So, but that's for, we'll talk about that at another time. And let's hope that sooner rather than later, we'll get legalized sports gambling. It's about freedom. We're sports fans. We should be able to decide if we want to bet on games or not.
So there's your teaser for next week's show. Make sure to follow us on Twitter @CallinThePodcast to get notified when new shows go up, and check us out online as well. Get all the shows there. CLNSmedia.com, click on the podcast tab, scroll down, find the CallNet logo, and you can get us right there. So until the next one, for Alex Lubitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you then.